I'm very proud of Mid-Central Community Action, West Bloomington Housing Collaborative, West Bloomington Revitalization Project, for the efforts that they've made to engage with the residents in the neighborhood. I've gotten dozens of calls from people who live on the 800 block of West Jefferson who have expressed support for the project. But there are those who are upset with the process, and so I'm very proud of the council for delaying the action until January.
Where do you think the Black Lives Matter group is on this? Can they be incorporated into future dialogues and future interactions in that neighborhood? What do you think their role is going forward?
I hope that they're engaged. I hope they continue to work with us and express their concerns and be part of the process.
Have they been constructive so far?
It's been challenging. I was at the police meeting in December. I was disappointed to see that the chief was only given a support or opposition. And for folks that aren't familiar, a lot of the questions that Black Lives Matter raised was focused on these highly charged national issues and then imbuing them into our local neighborhoods and then giving the chief an opportunity to either say he supported or opposed proposals that were suggested.
What did that do?
Well,
I
think that approach gets rid of the nuance in our criminal justice system. I think these issues are very complicated. I don't like to think in absolutes when it comes to justice. And where laws are absolute, there can be no justice. And so from where I sit, I think that these issues need to be a dialogue. They need to be focused on communicating with people who live in the neighborhood over a long period of time. So, for instance, body cameras. A video was shown of a black state senator, who had been told by the police that he could not videotape them. That's not a policy in Bloomington. There is no ordinance that says officers cannot be videotaped. I think it's disingenuous to suggest that there is and then ask the police chief to speak to that. I am fully supportive of folks that are filming police officers, so long as they're not interfering with their duties. And there's no ordinance against that.
How do you build something out of that approach that has generated some raw feelings on the part of the police?
I'll take accountability for when this was first presented in December that we could have been more open and more descriptive about the vision for the community house. I think that it was very kind of cut and dry in the packet and the material. This has been an ongoing process since 2013. A lot of different community groups have been engaged, neighbors have been engaged, and I think that's a very good thing. However, I was disappointed that we had some folks that were upset and that felt like they were left out of the process on purpose. So we delayed. And that's the kind of approach that I like to take. If somebody feels like they've been left out, we can delay the decision, get their feedback, and incorporate that into the tapestry of our community conversation.
In your conversations with Black Lives Matter, do you believe they've been satisfied with that delay?
I wouldn't say I've had any formal conversations with Black Lives Matter. And I know that last week there was a meeting that was held, and on Facebook it was posted, and they said specifically that public officials, elected officials, and police were not invited to this meeting. And you had to message somebody who has a profile that doesn't exist to get the location of the meeting. It's almost harder to get in the Batcave than it is to get to one of these meetings. And it's very tough for me to have a dialogue with the group when I don't know whom I'm speaking with, when we're not invited to the meetings, and we can't engage.
Does that delegitimize them as part of the process?
Absolutely not. I think that if there's a community group, if there's an advocacy group that wants to be part of the conversation, I am more than happy to listen. But if I'm not invited to meetings, if I'm not invited to speak with them and individuals, and I just have an anonymous Gmail and flyers are being posted throughout the community, that's not a conversation.
So how do you reach out further and drag them in whether they apparently want it or not?
So recently they had put out a survey to the elected officials and folks that are running for city council. I filled that survey out. I have a meeting with an individual on Sunday to talk more about that. I'm open. I want to hear their concerns, but one advocacy group does not speak for the entire neighborhood. I don't believe anybody has a whole monopoly on one neighborhood, one group. I think they should be woven into the tapestry of our neighborhoods in Ward 7.
We've had an interview with Kaya Jai of the Black Lives Matter group, and he has impressed on our John Norton that they want input. They want input. Do you have a clear idea of what that input looks like, whether it's policy formation, whether it's being folded into the existing efforts of the Human Relations Commission and the Minority and Police Partnership or some other organ yet to be determined. What do you think that means?
I'm not really sure. I've heard a lot of conversation about being part of the dialogue, but I don't know what that means. I mean, I'm open to talk to anybody. I'm open to hear suggestions and proposals, but I don't think that there is an absolute answer to these very complicated questions. A lot of the focus has been on what's broken window policing, not enforcing minor crimes. I don't know what that means. What is a minor crime? One person's minor crime is somebody else's. Do something. We need the police to take action. And I'll give you an example. I get calls all summer long from residents who are upset about what some might consider minor crimes. Somebody's driving past their house with the bass too loud, or there are kids in the street, they're yelling and swearing at neighbors. They want the police officers to do something, and they see inaction from the city as a problem. And I think those folks need to engage with Black Lives Matter and other people to help build that relationship in the neighborhood, and that makes our tapestry that much stronger.
There is documentation, though. Data from police stops that show the police are stopping African Americans in a disproportionate manner compared to the rest of the population. They are asking to search vehicles of African Americans far more often than they do other people of other ethnic backgrounds. They are less likely to find violations, contraband, in African-American vehicles than in other vehicles based on the data. This is not to allege in any way that police are targeting, but their zones of enforcement in certain areas of the cities based on crime rates lead them to look for these lower-level enforcement opportunities, and that has an effect on the minority community. What is a general approach that might address this?
I think that there's a breakdown in trust, and I'm looking forward to the community house as one solution, an innovative solution to build that trust over time. These problems aren't going to be fixed overnight. I don't dispute that there is data out there that shows some of that information, but I look to see what can we do to address that. Is it providing more data? Are we taking in looking at officer rates of pulling over minorities? Are we looking who's higher, who's lower? We need to make sure that we're being looking at data and making informed decisions that are pulled out of the political arena. And that's the way I look at these sorts of challenges. And it's also about building that trust. I think that there is a perception out there, and as I listened at the meeting in December with Black Lives Matter, there is definitely a perception that minorities feel as though they have been excluded and that they are targeted. So how do we bring them into the process? How do we show them that we are working, we want to work with them, we want their assistance, and we want to get rid of that perception? It's going to take a lot of work, and I'm willing to dig in there and make that happen.
Whether or not the police intend, there does seem to be disproportionate enforcement.
From what I said, in 2014, Chief Hefner came to me, and I had a meeting with him and Karen Schmidt, Alderman, about his vision for improving accountability. And he wanted to have an assistant chief that was in charge of standards and making sure that officer accountability was a top priority. We approved that. It was one of the only positions that were created in a budget meltdown. That was a good step in the right direction. And I believe that we are committed to doing better, to holding officers to account when they are going too far off the reservation. And I think that that's something that we didn't have to do, but we did because we take it very seriously. I think that if we make data-focused decisions, if we look at the numbers, that tells the ultimate story.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're talking with Alderman Scott Black, whose ward includes the proposed substation or community house, depending on your definition. What is in a name? Why is the shift in name important?
I think it's very key. I think the substation, when it was first presented, is maybe perhaps the way the chief thinks about it, because he sees it as we're in a place where officer-friendly can fill out reports, talk to the community, have community events. It's not going to be staffed full-time, but I don't think it quite captures the vision and the process and how we got to now. I think the community house does a better job of that, the West Jefferson Community House. Mid-Central Community Action has been wonderful and engaging with the neighborhood and trying to show that we want to get rid of that perception of that mistrust and get rid of that the feeling of targeting. This, to me, looks like it is a very good approach to solving some of these issues. I want to be innovative. I want to try something different. And if this community house can build a relationship with a young person on the West Side, that if it can prevent or deter one crime from taking place on West Jefferson, that's $12, $1 per month well spent from the city budget. And if it doesn't work, we don't have to do it again next year. We can try something different. I'd rather try something than be upset about things and not provide solutions. This is a solution that I think is going to go a long way to helping our neighborhood.
One of the demands of Black Lives Matter has been a police oversight board. What do you think of that proposal and how it's worked in other places, and could it work here?
I'm open to the idea. I don't want to express some support for a concept that doesn't have the details really ironed out. I'd want to know who gets appointed to the board. How long do they serve? What powers do they have? What is the makeup of the board? It's a conversation I think is worth having, but it's not going to be something that happens overnight. I think we need to engage with not only the neighborhoods, but the police officers as well. When people are working with the police, they are usually not on their best day, and I think that we need to make sure that those officers are engaged in the process.
Chief Hefner has raised some objections involving union representation and the potential for conflict between the union, the police oversight board, the city, and police administration. What's your thought about how to tackle that issue?
This is why I think it's important to have the police at the table when we're talking about this sort of thing. I'd want to hear their thoughts. I'd want to hear kind of what does this board look like. And I think that it's important that the police, if they are to be overseen by this board, are part of that conversation.
Have you seen how these boards have functioned elsewhere?
In other areas, you've seen these boards begin. Their genesis is in a issue that took place, and it tends to be very anti-police in the beginning, but a lot of these boards over time become very pro-police. They become very supportive because they learn how difficult the job is. These boards often will become very supportive and I don't want to use the word rubber stamp, but become don't hold the police to account as maybe some of the original folks who had been supportive of it were hoping.
In your view, Black Lives Matter has not successfully engaged on the issue. A vote is coming up on Monday. How will you vote?
I'm looking forward to supporting the community house. I think it is a way that we can actually make something happen in that neighborhood. I've gotten a lot of feedback from residents on West Jefferson who've been very supportive. We've had some folks who don't live in the neighborhood who have been very opposed to the idea. Some folks live that are very vocal in East Side subdivisions who are saying that this is going to be over-policing or this is a bad idea. I think we've done a good job of getting more resident feedback from people. I've gotten calls from neighbors who have been very supportive of it, were confused why we delayed, and they want to see this happen.
How do you think Black Lives Matter will react to that vote?
I suspect they'll be opposed, and I want to hear what their opposition is. But I want to hear it based on the facts and reality of our local neighborhood. We're going to see a lot of positive things happening. And if this were to pass, I hope Black Lives Matter is there with us, is there at the community house, and is there as part of building that partnership, because it's going to take a lot of time. It's going to take a lot of effort. And I'm willing to make that happen. And I'm hoping that they'll be willing to do the hard work as well. I think the community house is going to be a place where people can come together, and those groups that want to be there and part of that dynamic and that tapestry will be there. If those groups that are opposed want to sit on the sidelines and be upset about the ultimate outcome and not be part of the solution to these issues, that would be their choice. But I'm proud of the diversity of Ward 7. We are the most diverse, and both in terms of race, gender, socioeconomic, sexual orientation. And I think that's a really good thing. That's why I chose to live in historic Bloomington. And I think that's supported. And I don't want to see groups that want to tear people apart or split our neighborhoods up, because I love our close neighborhoods. It's an asset. It's not a liability.
Is Black Lives Matter in that book, in your view?
I wouldn't say that, but I think that from what I've seen so far, I've been disappointed in some of the approaches that have been taken, and especially with the chief of police, who's been wonderful at trying to engage with the neighborhood and do more things to build that relationship. I was out with him last summer. We were throwing the ball around on West Jefferson. He does these walks with the community. He does ice cream with the cop, coffee with the cop. We've done a very robust approach on social media to engage with the community. We don't have to do any of those things. But Chief Hefner does a wonderful job and goes above and beyond the call of duty to help engage with some of these issues and build them over time. I think people should be part of the solution and not just being upset and firing accusations out.